Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Well, welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Brian McCauley here in the city of DreamHack of Jönköping.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stephanie Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston. Thanks for joining us. Today, we have with us Dr. Lindsay Miglior, perhaps better known as GamerDoc. Dr. Miglior is a licensed medical expert in physical medicine and rehabilitation. She's a leading expert in esports-related health issues, which is what we'll be talking about today. She does so much. She's been on like dozens of panels at conventions, medical conferences, PAX East, Gen Con. There's others on that list. I could keep going. She streams. She's appeared in articles from numerous media outlets, is the executive director of Queer Women of Esports, who we've had, you know, talked about on the show before. And really what we're here to talk about today is she recently co-edited the Handbook of Esports Medicine, which got published by Springer in 2021. So Lindsay, welcome.
Thanks. I'm ready to talk about some esports medicine, some nerd stuff. I'm here for it. I'm ready.
Awesome.
Well, you're the second doctor we've had, Dr. Aaron Koshy. He's got a PhD now, as well as the editor of the International Journal of Esports. But so we've had two actual medical doctors on the show already, which is amazing and shows how far esports has come. So, Lindsay, we're going to start. This is our first question always. How do you define esports?
Competitive video gaming is really what I call it. If it's, you know, gaming is you playing video games in your house for free, you know, in front of your buddies. Esports is in front of an audience or for money. So, you know, when you inject a reward, a monetary reward, or an audience larger than your Friday night Mario Kart party, then it becomes esports, really, in my mind.
Nice. High level competitive kind of stuff, right?
I didn't say you had to be good.
Of course.
Thank God.
Of course.
Thank God.
So what about esports medicine, right? Let's unpack this, because it's kind of a newer thing to really sort of catch waves. What are issues in esports medicine? When we talk about esports medicine, like what are we really getting at here?
Yeah, so esports medicine is a catch-all term for what happens to your body when you play video games for years after years after years. You don't have to be in esports to suffer from ailments that can affect people in esports medicine. You can just be a chronic gamer. But most of the time, because of the hours these people are putting in, we do see it primarily in esports. And it's just like, you know, if you play soccer, you're predisposed to a multitude of injuries. So ankle sprains are huge in soccer, concussions. You know, if you're playing basketball, you're more likely to get an ACL tear. If you're playing volleyball, you're more likely to get a finger injury, shoulder dislocation. So it's the same thing for esports. You know, you're having chronic tendinopathies of the hand and wrist, neck and back issues, eye strain, a bunch of slew of nutritional issues as well. So it's the injuries and ailments you are predisposed to because of the activity you're doing.
So how does this kind of change from your standard office thing where people are like 8 or 9 hours in an office, you know, like a zombie kind of, oh, I hate my life. Click, 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 email, click, click, click.
So I worked an office job the summer between high school and college. I was, you know, my aunt was the office manager of a company. She got me a cush job, you know, scanning pictures into their files. And I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't sitting there for 8-9 hours a day, right? I would get there, I'd go get some coffee, I'd sit down, I'd scan some files, do a little spin in my chair, go talk to the person in the cubicle next to me, go, you know, then you go on your lunch, then you're doing all the things. You're not sitting there hyper-focusing for 8 hours. Mm. When you're playing video games, when you're competing, when you're training, you are literally immobile except for your fingers and hands for the duration of that game, right? You're not taking breaks. You're not getting up. You're not talking to your office mate. And when you're in the office, you're not typing at 120 words per minute for 9 hours. But, you know, we're doing, people say 600 actions per minute. I say more like 200, 300, 400 actions per minute. So you're repetitively using these muscles continuously for a long span of time. So it's the frequency and it's the duration.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really good comparison because they are different. Like you said, there's, you know, more interruptions between the sitting and the executions that I might do at a desk, but even streamers, right? Like, I'm in awe of these people who do these 8 to 10 hour broadcasts and they get up like twice to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, how? Right?
Well, I've been told a true gamer move is a bottle under the desk. You know, that's the way to do it.
You got to get a shiwi then, you know, the funnel for the ladies.
Oh my goodness.
Our new business idea, guys. We'll talk about it after the podcast. I have a new business idea.
Oh, man. So yeah, it's so much to think about there.
Yeah.
So how did you get into esports medicine, Lindsay?
That's a really good question. There was a couple different parts in my life that led me down this path. One of them was I was kind of fed up with traditional medicine. You know, a lot of times people think of medicine as healing people and saving people's lives, but a lot of medicine is just keeping people alive. Is just managing symptoms of an illness. There's not a lot of prevention in modern day medicine. There's not a lot of actual curing in modern day medicine because we all develop these unhealthy lifestyles that raise our cholesterol, raise our blood pressure, and we just take medications all day to lower the symptoms. And we're not really dealing with the prevention side. And so that kind of was one of the impetus to doing this. But the other one was, you know, I play video games. I played video games my whole life. And I have a group of buddies who I've played with for the longest time. And, you know, when you're going through medical school, everyone comes out of the woodworks for antibiotics or for, you know, they want retinol so they don't have to go to the dermatologist. Everyone wants something from you when you're a med student, when all you know is like biochem. And so people were asking me for medical advice in real life, but they're also asking me for medical advice online, like when I'm gaming. You know, people are like, my finger hurts, my wrist hurts, my neck hurts, my back hurts. And I'd be like, I don't know, dude, leave me alone. I just want to play Call of Duty. Like, go away. And so they go to their doctors and they come back and their doctor would be like, all right, y'all, I'm going to be out for the next 2 weeks because my doctor said to take time off gaming. It's like, if you're a runner, if you're a basketball player, you're not telling them to just stop playing their sport because they have a little bit of pain, right? You're rehabbing, you're fixing it. And no one was doing that. So I was like, well, no one's going to do it. I guess I'll do it. Why not?
That's so funny. No, I have to say it's so funny because literally like 2 hours before this, I called my doctor because I'm having like some heel and foot pain. Mm-hmm. And she told me, I was like, you know, because I do martial arts. And she was like, you should stop doing that for... She didn't give me like a period of time and I'm like forever for a week, like what? And like, I'm not going to stop doing it completely. Like even if, you know, and I was like, really, is that all you got for me? So like, I totally feel you on that. And I'm thinking about for people like athletes and esports athletes who, you know, this is a career for them and not even just like a hobby, you know, to just say like, oh, well, stop.
Yep.
Seems kind of insufficient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to the general manager of one of the CSGO teams outside Katowice or Cologne or something. I said, oh, what was the training like? And he said something insane, like 12 or 16 hours a day. And I was just going, that actually can't be good and can't benefit performance, right? Because I've seen, you know, when I've spent too long reading and don't sleep enough, I remember a period where I was just terrible at CSGO. I'm terrible now, but more terrible because I wasn't sleeping enough. And we had Tim Smithies on here talking about sleep. So, I mean, like, is that something you face that people are really kind of overdoing it, even these top million-dollar branded teams?
Mm. So we're not really seeing those 8, 10, 12, 14-hour days in the pro scene anymore because, like you said, people have realized it doesn't work, right? Grinding for 12, 14 hours in your sport isn't going to make you better. You actually might get worse. So
unless you're an ultra distance runner.
Sure. Yes. Unless you need to do it. So we're seeing more in the pro scenes that when players have resources, when they have coaches, the coaches are saying, okay, we're going to do a 3-hour block in the morning. We might do an hour of VOD review and then we'll do another session in the afternoon. Mm. We'll scrim. It's more in the path to pro that we see that 12, 14, 16 hour grind session. And unfortunately that's holding back these amateurs from being professionals because they're not training efficiently because not only are they developing bad habits, they're not getting the most out of their practice sessions, but they're getting burnt out more quickly. And when you get burnt out, you don't want to do your sport anymore. You don't want to play your game anymore. So we're not necessarily seeing those hours anymore, you know, thankfully, but in the amateur scene, we certainly are.
That's fascinating, because one of my questions for you was going to be, you know, do we see this? Is this just something the pros have to worry about, or is this becoming an issue for collegiate, for high school, for amateur leagues? And you're saying it's a bigger issue, perhaps, for amateurs trying to climb to the pro level, if I understand correctly.
Honestly, it's an issue for anyone who's ever played video games. If you play video games for more than 3 hours a week, your body has probably undergone some changes because of video gaming. And obviously that's, I know we're on the Esports Research Network, obviously that's not backed by data, but it's like in the 50s and the 40s, when doctors were saying, cigarettes for, this one's the best for pregnancies, smoke a Marlboro Red. Like, you gotta think that someone was like, let's use our common sense brain. This probably isn't good for us. Like, and me using my common sense brain, seeing the effect of gaming on tendons, seeing the effect of gaming on our eyes, seeing the effect of blue light on our sleep schedule. If you're experiencing, if you're exposing yourself to gaming for a significant amount of time and you're not practicing safe practices, you have to have had some sort of changing. Some of your body's going through changes.
That's what I was thinking. I was just picturing the 12-year-olds going, you're playing a lot of Fortnite. Things are going to happen to you.
Things are going to happen to your body. You're not going to understand it.
And then the calories, of course, associated with gaming is snacking. And, you know, Dr. Pepper and Monster is the one you see at every event, a giant Monster, free Monster. And then, the smell of the bathrooms after a three-day gaming festival is almost 50% Monster.
Mm-hmm. Smell the bits of kidney in the
blood.
I mean, so how big is that factor, though, the Cheetos and the Gatorade in how gaming affects your health?
So in the competitive scene, we aren't really seeing a huge amount of that. You know, a lot of them are taking it seriously and at least choosing some sort of meals. Definitely there still is the stereotype of, you know, pre-prepared processed foods, because when you're gaming, you don't want to get up and go make a meal, right? You grab whatever's close and quick. A lot of times when you see pro athletes and pro gamers with a Monster or a Red Bull in their hand, there's not actually Monster or Red Bull in that can. They have to hold that can, right? They have to go out onto stage holding Red Bull. They have to have it next to their desk because of their sponsorship agreement. But backstage, a lot of them are pouring that drink out and putting water into it because there's so much Red Bull you can drink.
Like the America's Got Talent judges, they have wine and bourbon and not actually Coca-Cola in there.
Right. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, the energy drink, esports is heavily influenced by marketing, heavily influenced by sponsorship deals, because a lot of people, you know, it's top down, right? We see Ninja, we see Cypher, we see Mongrel doing something and we want to be like them. And so we emulate them, especially when the majority of their audience is 14, 15, 16, 17 years old in an area that's heavily influenced by social media. The generation below us is heavily influenced by social media. So we see them with these sponsorship deals and we say, I should do that. That's going to make me like them. That's going to make me cool. And so we are seeing a heavy use of energy drinks and other unhealthy habits. And like you said earlier, you know, there's a study came out earlier this year that showed that collegiate esports athletes have a lower lean body mass, same BMI. So weigh the same amount as their age match counterparts who don't play video games, but have a lower lean body mass, which can have catastrophic effects. You know, lean body mass protects you against things like diabetes, like cardiovascular disease, against cancer. So, you know, these small changes that we're seeing can have long-term effects down the road.
That's interesting. And the nutrition stuff is something that I think pro teams are paying more attention to, right? Like, I know there are some pro organizations that have hired nutritionists, just like you would see in football, right? Or traditional sports as well, football, American football. Brian always likes to give me crap for our European listeners. So is that something that you've kind of seen as well, or?
So we have an interesting trend in esports right now. You know, we had a contraction of spending the past couple of years. There was a huge influx of money into esports, and then COVID, a contraction of spending, and also people were not seeing esports for what it was, which is an investment and not just a way to get rich quick scheme. But we are seeing a little bit more resource being injected into the scene right now. So people have performance coaches, dietitians, nutritionists. However, are those resources being utilized correctly? Like, if you're gonna have a health and wellness protocol, is having a dietitian come talk to your athletes for an hour the best usage of your time. Mm-hmm. And in order to understand why that's not the best idea, you have to understand the path to pro. So if you have a soccer player, a collegiate soccer player, and you have a nutritionist come talk to them, they're going to be listening, right? They're going to be listening, and they're going to have a background in nutrition and diet from the years and years of soccer and the things they've learned from coaches and players and colleagues across the years. Because when they were 6 years old, they were put on an organized soccer team. And over the years, over the 15 years it took them to get to college, they've had a multitude of athletic trainers, of coaches, of colleagues, of support staff, strength and conditioning coaches that they've interacted with. And so they have buy-in because they know if they strengthen their quads, then they're going to run faster and they're not going to get an ACL tear. They know that if they sprain their ankle and they go to PT after, the recovery is going to be quicker. They have buy-in for these resources and they know how to use them. When you join an esports organization for the first time, for some of these people, it's the first time they've been on a truly organized team with a coach and with support staff. So when you give them a resource, they don't necessarily know how to use it. You see this huge complexity gaming, you know, athletic training complex, and you got to wonder how many people are actually using this. And I've seen this firsthand. Like I've seen this firsthand with teams I've worked with. They don't use the resources. So these one-time clinics and camps and things are a great start, but the lasting benefits, who knows?
Interesting.
Okay, I have a question. Is protein a good thing to maintain performance, because, you know, blood sugars don't spike with carbs? Or is it like, you know, doing a half marathon and you need the carbo load? Where is the balance there compared to traditional sports?
So truly, we don't know, because there's not a lot of studies on caloric consumption, macronutrient consumption, and utilization in esports. But what we do know is that you need carbs for your brain to work. Glucose, which is, you know, broken down, which is a derivative of carbohydrates, is the only form of fuel your brain can use. Protein can't cross the blood-brain barrier. Fat, it isn't broken down into glucose. So you need carbohydrates to perform. So theoretically, you would think we would need more carbs prior to esports because you're utilizing your brain more. But, you know, what those carbs come from is super important, because you have your slow release carbs and you have your fast release carbs. You don't want to go for the processed foods that are going to cause your blood sugar to spike, your insulin to try and compensate for that, and then you're going to get drowsy 45 minutes later. You want the carbohydrate that's going to slowly release over the time of your competition. You know, there's all these other studies about what high fat, high protein diets at certain times of your training can do. So if you're about to travel, there's some data that shows you might want to choose a high fat diet for the couple of days beforehand. It's all in its infancy, and it's all kind of speculative at this point, because, you know, the research is in its infancy. So
before I have to travel for a conference, extra bacon is extra your, bacon. Your doctor advice. Yeah, okay. Definitely. I'm vegetarian, but I still remember bacon.
Yeah. So let's talk about this book. I'm really excited about this. Tell us kind of how the book came to be, or, like, you know, what was the thing that made you say, like, this, let's gather these people together, right? This is something we need to be doing, and how that kind of came about.
Yeah. So I'm a medical doctor, like we talked about before. And when you first show up to med school, they give you a list. It's like going to Harry Potter, but not as cool. It's like going to Hogwarts for the first time, but not as cool. They give you a list of books you have to buy. And so you buy all of these textbooks, and they sit in your house, and you refer to them when you need stuff. So I have a big stack of medical books back here that I go to when I need information. You know, when you write a textbook, by the time it's published, it's 3 years out of date, because that's how long it takes to write the book. But it's still somewhere you can go to flip through and find easy, reliable sources of information. Because if you know, you know, anyone can put anything on the internet. Anything can say anything on podcasts. I could have made up everything I just said, and it's not being peer reviewed, right? It's, you know, you two are too nice to correct me if I'm saying anything wrong. But, you know, if you publish...
How would we know if you're saying something wrong?
Exactly. I was going to say, we're too ignorant.
But she's doctor, but we're not that doctor. Like,
just making it.
Yeah, you could tell us anything. I had some horse dewormer for my lunch.
Yeah.
I saw on the internet, it's all the craze.
So good, just put it in your toothpaste, yeah. So when you publish a textbook, you know, it's vetted by the publisher, especially if it's a reputable publisher. And so when I went to look for data on esports, I couldn't find anything. All I found were websites linked to someone who was trying to sell me something, or crappy YouTube videos from 6 years ago that had inaccurate medical information. And I needed a place to go to that had everything I needed to know about esports medicine. And you guys didn't exist yet. And so I said, if it's not going to exist, I guess I'll do it myself. So the book, really, the idea started 3 years ago, started writing around 2.5 years ago, made it through. It's funny because I didn't know how to publish a book, right? Like, unless you do the thing, you don't know how to do the thing. So I wrote the book like 90% done. And then I went and found a publisher and they're like, you did what? I was like, yeah, I wrote the book. You know, do you guys want to see it? They're like, oh, okay. Because normally you just give a book proposal, they accept it, and then you go write the book. So we wrote the book. And then they came back to us and they said, you know, we love this. Give us more pages, give us more information. So it was constantly evolving. It really got finished in around January of this year of 2021. And yeah, it came out in May or June. Super happy with it. Mm-hmm. I've already started working on edits and updates because, you know, like I said, once you publish a book, it's 3 years out of date. There's so much data that's come out on esports since then. So I'm looking forward to updating it.
Who's the actual target audience? Because I'm marketing, so like, who's the target audience?
The target audience is healthcare providers, clinicians, coaches or trainers with at least a little bit of medical background, who want to learn more about the injuries that gamers can face and how to prevent them and treat them.
And how does this get distributed? Do the representatives of the publishing company talk to these sort of stakeholders? Are you going to conferences handing out free samples? I mean,
that's a really good question, Brian. If it wasn't 2021, that was exactly what I'd be doing right now, going to medical conventions, going to gaming conventions, handing out books. We are going to be launching a esports medicine training course for medical providers in 2022. So, you know, one of the issues, you know, why are gamers not seeking out treatment for their injuries and illnesses? Well, one is they don't know they're getting injured from gaming. They don't recognize the warning signs. But two is when they do go to their doctor has no idea what's going on, right? They don't ask them about gaming. They don't know what gaming is. Even if they do ask them about it, they don't know the injuries that they're susceptible to. So we have to educate the doctors too. So that's really what I'm working on right now is if you do go to the doctor, making sure that doctor knows what to do. So that's really what the book is for. There's other books coming out for lay people, but it was really important to me to get a text out there that's peer-reviewed, scientific, and a little bit harder to digest because if you want doctors to take a field seriously, you have to make it a little bit snooty, right?
Just like research.
Yeah.
It's like these papers in the top journals are going, what's that word? Why couldn't they just say it simply? It's like I tell my students in their thesis, you don't need big words to seem smart. Simple story, make the person understand. And there's this perception that you need to use big words, have 5 commas, 2 semicolons, and an exclamation point for anyone to go, oh, we should take this seriously. I didn't understand a word of it.
I don't even know how to use a semicolon in a sentence.
Oh, I do, because Lonely Island had a song about it. So that's how I learned it. So on YouTube, Lonely Island. Yeah, that's how I learned. Sorry. It was great education. Out. Semicolon is when there's more than one thing. Because at the end of the song, she said, no, that's all colons, you fail.
I was going to say.
So that's how I learned.
I love the idea of this book being for physicians, though. And it, like you said, a handbook, right? Like a reference guide that they can go to. Because I think you're right about, you know, gamers not knowing that treatment exists or not feeling like they have someone to go to. Because I think for a long time there wasn't, right? It was like you'd go to your doctor and they'd be like, carpal tunnel, right? Yeah. Like that's where it's got to feel like the go-to for everything, right? And it's like, no, it's not that. So this is really, really cool. I'm so glad that you all decided to undertake this. And I think there's value in it, you know, even if it's designed for medical practitioners. I think there's a lot of value in it for, you know, us academics to also understand like what sort of health issues players are facing as we write about the culture and the industry and all of that as well.
You should send Steph a free copy and she promises to read it and give you feedback because she said she was so excited. So I think you should go through with Steph and help her understand it.
I had a stack of books back here and I've like given them all away. I reordered like 20 more a couple weeks ago in hopes of bringing them to PAX West on Thursday, but they haven't arrived yet. So I have the one copy that all of the co-editors inscribed for each other. And then I have one extra copy. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Brian.
You go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, just to give us an idea, like, I have the table of contents in front of me, so I can kind of, you know, I can see what's in it. But do you want to tell us, like, some of the stuff that the book spans, or maybe like one or two kind of standout chapters, kind of sell it to us?
For sure. So the first chapter is basically what esports is. And if you know everything about esports, you're probably not going to get anything out of it. But even if you're in the field of esports, I think you might learn something from this chapter, because just like the chapter on upper extremity disorders, mm-hmm. it's researched, right? It's researched and it's put together in a scientific way. And in trying to tell a story and trying to give you the tools to treat these athletes. If you don't know the difference between console and PC gaming, it's going to be very hard for you to treat the different illnesses that affect those two players. So the first chapter is a background on esports, on what esports is, the history, and the different types of gaming that is played. Then we delve into by body area, what things can go wrong. So if you're having hand or wrist pain, you go to the upper extremity chapter. If you're having back pain, you go to the back and neck chapter. But then we went a little bit further and we did a couple more chapters, one on ergonomics. So if you are a coach who wants to set up your lab ergonomically, you can go to the ergonomic chapter and work your way step by step through. My favorite chapter is the injury prevention chapter, because it's so cool. Like, if you want to prevent injuries in esports, right? Because that's what we all want to do. Mm-hmm. What do you have to do to do that? And the first step is to determine what injuries are happening in gaming. And we're not even on that step yet, which is so wild. So it's a hypothetical chapter on what all the steps that need to happen in order to prevent injuries in gaming. And in that chapter, I put like 40 to 60 paper ideas. So if someone wants to do esports research and is looking for a paper to do, you can go to that chapter and there's literally, I like wrote them out for you on how to do them. So I really love that chapter. There's also a nutrition chapter, a mental performance chapter, a bunch of other really cool things. So, you know, even if you're not in the medical field, if you have a background in reading, just more textbook level writing, you're going to have a good time.
I'm actually interested now about the mental health, the performance chapter, because I reached Gold Nova 4. Yay, I'm highly skilled, and immediately realized I shot too far and it's too much pressure and too much work. And, you know, and I have a friend who apparently reaches Dota at 4,000 level, you know, where you're getting really near the top, but then craps his pants every time. And, you know, psychologically, he just drops back down a lot. I mean, so what are the sort of things you could tell us about maintaining your performance mentally?
Yeah.
Any notes?
So, you know, I'm very open and honest in the book, in the beginning chapter and everything, about how some of this is backed in data in gaming and some of it is extrapolated from existing populations. Mm. So when we talk about the mental health aspect of esports, there's nothing. Right. There's almost nothing out there. There's a couple of papers. So we extrapolate from video gaming, which Dr. Kowert does a really excellent job of talking about. She's, you know, has like 1,000 books. So she kind of lends her ear there. And then when we talk about the mental performance side, we extrapolate from sports psychology. So, you know, one of the reasons why we see in esports, I think, is because of burnout. And burnout isn't just like a catchphrase like safe space. You know, burnout and safe space have actual meanings, but they're just overused by people who have no idea what they're talking about. But, you know, when you're training inefficiently for something, or you feel like you don't have control. So I love Fortnite. I don't care if that people judge me because of that. I also play other esports, but I love Fortnite. And a year and a half ago, everyone left the competitive Fortnite scene and switched to different titles. They went to Valorant, they went to League. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because they had this thing called aim assist in for controller players, and it was a little bit overpowered. And so controller players were just lasering PC players out of the air. I think it balanced the game, but whatever. And then Fortnite stopped releasing patch notes. So they stopped releasing notes on what they were going to be doing every mm-hmm. week and the changes they were going to be having. So as a result, they put new items in the game that people were not prepared for in the middle of a competitive season, and it would completely change the meta. And so people were getting frustrated with those aspects, and they didn't feel like they had control anymore. And that's a huge contributor to burnout. Not feeling like you have control over your situation is a huge contributor to burnout. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's inconsequential that people started leaving. So making sure that you have control over your environment, your training efficiently is something that really can help with burnout. So what you're exactly what we were talking about earlier, if you're training for 12, 14, 16 hours a day, you're going to get burned out. You have to focus on training more efficiently. So training skill specific things, you know, working individually on your aim, working individually on your hand-eye coordination, doing VOD review, and not just doing VOD review of the plays that you did well, but doing VOD review of the plays that you did not well, and going
video on demand reviews. You're saying
exactly, video on demand. Sorry. So you know, injecting not just solo queuing, because people solo queue for hours and hours and hours, and like, why aren't I getting any better? That's like if LeBron James went out there and scrimmaged for 8 hours a day and is like, why aren't I doing any better? You got to practice free throws. You got to practice dribbling. You got to practice passing. You got to work on strategy. It's not rocket science, right? It's just basic science. So I think those are some ways you can definitely improve.
So I went on holiday recently, and I went away for 12 days. And I came back and I played the best I'd ever played at CSGO. And I thought it was because I wasn't playing CSGO as much and I'd had a break from the game. And now you've made me realize it was because I was generally burned out from working too much and COVID and being stuck in the office and everything. And it was, so your esports performance is not just linked to you burning out in the game. It's also your sleep, your burnout in life. If you're stressed, even though it's a stress relief, you can't play well when you're not 100% well yourself mentally.
Exactly.
All right, exactly. I learned something there.
Yeah, I was really excited to see the chapter on cultural competence by Caitlin McGee, I think it was, listed at the end of the book as a nice kind of like dovetail, bringing it all together and talking about how, like, yeah, all these things are influenced by the broader culture of esports and like, what is that and what does it look like and how does that affect the players mentally, physically? So that was really exciting for me as like a cultural person to see incorporated into a handbook. Yeah, it's really neat looking. So I'm super excited about this book. I definitely think this is something everybody should check out. There it is, beautiful.
Okay, I'm not selling it for you here, but I'm actually going, I want to read the first chapter, the chapter on mental performance and the cultural competence, because I do a lot of culture stuff as well in esports. I have a paper on Vietnam, which was interesting.
Yeah.
And we had one finding was that the Vietnamese had a very competitive mindset. They had a cultural competition. It was win at all costs. And it was driving a lot of people to be the pay to play in mobile games and stuff. So yeah. So what were just some of the cultures discussed in that chapter? Can you remember?
So when we're talking about cultural competency, we're not talking about like the difference between Vietnamese culture and here in South Korea. What we're really talking about is the culture of esports, because in order to understand, in order to treat esports athletes, you have to understand the culture, right? In order to understand why giving them a workout program and then sending them home isn't going to work, you have to understand the history, the path to pro, how things work out along the way. So I really touched on the general overview of it later. How did, when that esports player shows up to your esports organization, what were the steps that got them there? And that you have to understand that in order to treat them. And you also have to understand esports, because you know what people in this industry can smell? That's a fake, right? We know when people are telling us lies. We know when people don't know what they're talking about. You know, there's such a stigma against non-endemic people in the space. We don't want non-endemic people in the space. You know what? Esports is easy to teach. I can teach someone what Dota is. I can teach someone the basics of League of Legends. I can't teach someone how to get a degree in marketing, right? Why don't we want that marketing genius who works in traditional sports to come into this space and just learn about esports? I think that's a great idea. But we don't like non-endemic. So you have to walk the walk and talk the talk in order to work in this industry. So that's really what that chapter is about.
I think understanding Dota would be a bit more difficult for me than doing another marketing degree, to be honest. I've had
it is a lot. Like
4 years later.
Dota's a lot to take out. Well, as we kind of wrap things up here, one of the things we always like to ask our guests is what future research topics you'd like to see explored. So I know we maybe touched on this a little bit. You know, you mentioned you have a chapter of some ideas or what's something you'd love to really see people full steam ahead produce some more scholarship on?
I want everything. Why do I have to pick one thing?
Give us a couple. No, it's fine.
Anything that you, and you know, actually, it doesn't have to be medicine. I mean, you do a lot of work with queer esports. We're at any topic because we've got researchers from every discipline. And you know, what are the things that actually you don't have to do medicine? Go with your gamer head, not your medical doctor head here.
They're one and the same.
They're not the same.
There's this thing called stereotype threat, which I'm sure both of you are aware of, but I'll explain it for people who are listening. So if there's a stereotype like women are bad at math, right? And you are aware of that stereotype. So if I'm going to give you a math test and you're a woman and you go in and I say, hey, this is going to see how much worse women are than men at math, because you know, women are bad at math. And you give them that math test, they're going to do worse because they're aware of that stereotype. And it's even so, you know, ingrained in the way we are, is they did this study where they had female and male avatars, where they went in, so you could either, you know, no matter the gender identity of the person controlling the avatar, you had either a female or a male avatar. And they went into the game and they had them do math problems. And they said before, they said, hey, you know, women are bad at math, let's go. And they found that the female avatar, regardless of who was controlling them, did worse on the math test in the game. So stereotype threat's a real thing. So in gaming, we have this stereotype that women are bad at gaming. Women are bad at esports. I would love to see some research dispelling that stereotype. One thing that I really want to do, which would be so incredibly easy, is to have players, before they go into a tournament, rank themselves by how good they are at the game. So 0 to 10, how good are you at this game before they go into the tournament? And then at the end of the tournament, seeing where they ended up. So ranking them 1 to 10 based on where they ended up in the rankings, and seeing the difference between men and women and non-binary individuals. I think that would be super interesting. And I would love to see the results on that, because I think we all know what the answers would be.
Well,
yeah. I teach that one. Teachers actually influence girls because of that held cultural belief, and they will go, Johnny, you're fine. 2 plus 2 is 6. Brilliant, Johnny. Amanda, you know, you need some help, dear. And it actually pervades classrooms. It's insane, that one.
Yeah.
I know both of you kick my ass in most games.
Not CSGO.
I have no problem admitting it.
Not CSGO.
Maybe not CSGO, but you'd push me close, and then 2 games later, you'd beat my ass. Once you got warmed up.
Yeah.
But I'd never get near you in Fortnite.
Oh, don't.
Challenge accepted.
I just love that game. It's got the most toxic culture because the culture is created by 16-year-olds, but I just love the game. I love the mechanics. I love the way it's played. I think it's just a great game.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Miglior, thanks so much for coming here, taking time out of your busy day to talk with us about your book, about esports medicine in general. This was a blast. I think this is a really great episode. We will be sure to drop links to your social media, your website, a link to purchase the book, of course. buy it.
Anyone in my marketing class is watching this. This is marketing. I didn't sign up for this.
thank you so much again for being here with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about this. And when I get to use actual like medicine and science terms on podcasts, I just love it so much. Just love nerding out.
Great.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.